Blog Talk Radio.
Go down
Christina Rake. I am the host of A Question of Faith, along with Dr. Chuck Kennedy, our co-host. This is a show that explores the intersection of science and religion with the paranormal. We will be your tour guides through this mind-bending journey into the well-known, the little-known, and the never-known. Tonight on A Question of Faith, we're discussing near-death experiences and how they connect with earthbound spirits, with hauntings, and also with human spirituality and psychology. We're also going to talk about how these different disciplines can intersect within the study of near-death experiences and of experiences of the dying, of hospice patients. So we're going to look at all of this and, of course, treat the subject with the reverence and sacredness that it deserves. But first, The Prologue. A Question of Faith is just one of the weekly programs on my old Catholic radio station to which you are tuned. My old Catholic radio is an evangelization ministry that holds to the dogmas and traditions of the United States Old Catholic Church. We're Catholic, but we are fully inclusive, calling everyone to every sacrament, regardless of race, gender identification, sexual orientation, or marital status. However, all opinions and views expressed on this show by hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of My Old Catholic Radio or the United States Old Catholic Church. For more information about the Old Catholic Church, you can go to www.usocc.org. Now, here on My Old Catholic Radio, we have a lot of excellent programs, from paranormal programs to Bible classes to psychic medium call-in shows to prayer and to theology and social issue reflection. Follow us by clicking on the follow button at the top of your computer screen if you're listening as live streaming, or visit www.blogtalkradio.com and search for My Old Catholic Radio. There you can click the follow button, find out how to reach us, and figure out all manner of possible ways to get in touch with us. This way, when you click follow, you'll be informed whenever we schedule a new program. Also, in our archives, there are over 100 episodes on various topics that you can download and listen to. Now that we've gotten all of the legalities out of the way, I want to bring on our co-host, Dr. Chuck. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Christina?
I am great. I'm very excited about this discussion. When Dr. Chuck and I were talking about near-death experiences a couple of days ago, and not even talking about doing a show about them, they just came up in discussion. It turned out that we had a happy coincidence because Dr. Chuck, as RN, actually worked with hospice patients from the medical angle, and I, as clergy, worked with them from the spiritual angle at different times in our lives. So that was kind of interesting. We were both able to discuss those different aspects with haunts. Dr. Chuck, what was your experience in working with the dying? What did you do? What sorts of things did you observe that sort of helped you or set you into different areas in the paranormal studies?
Well, as a RN case manager and in some cases nursing home administrator, I was responsible for overseeing all the care that went on with the hospice patient. And hospice is such a beautiful program, but the downside of hospice is most families put their loved one on hospice way too late. And by that, I mean, they wait till that person is just about ready to take their last breath because they're so afraid if they put their family member on hospice, they're giving up. And the reality is if they would put their family member on hospice sooner, they'd be eligible for so many great benefits, such as the clergy who can come in as volunteers and other volunteer services that can really help their loved one. So it's really sad that family members wait so long. But I've literally been at the bedside of hundreds of patients as they took their last breath. And over time I learned I can accept helping somebody die peacefully. The hard part is accepting watching their family watch their loved one die, because where the patient's pain ends, the family's pain begins.
Right. And what was interesting in this show, just from my own personal experience, it was in high school and college that I started to read about near-death experiences extensively. I had had one when I was 9, and I had had many spiritual episodes, attacks, and all manner of things, and was a medium from birth. So discovering this area of inquiry was huge for me. After reading about near-death experiences, my fear of death just dissipated to the point where I was, for me, reading that stuff was like remembering it wasn't like learning. It was remembering where I came from. And it was after all of that extensive reading and study that I volunteered for hospice. So I felt that now that I was so calm with it, I could go into that situation and work with the families to sort of help them know that their loved one hasn't ended. So I actually came into it working more with the families than with the patients. In some cases, I couldn't talk to the patients. They were already comatose. And so I hung out with the family. But go ahead, Dr. Chuck. I'm sorry.
What a lot of what I did, and that's where, as a nurse, I would sit there, and a lot of what my job was would be pain control. And as a paranormal investigator, I was researching NDEs, but now I'm working with people who they aren't going to get the chance to come back. But much of what they experienced in their final days, final hours, or final minutes of life was very similar to an NDE. The only difference is they didn't make it back to tell their story. But you could see things developing and setting up just like in an NDE. And the interesting thing about it is in a lot of cases, this is where I first got into doing hypnosis probably 20, 25 years ago, is because when I was doing hospice, a lot of the patients didn't want to be drugged out on morphine. They were having severe pain, but they wanted to be awake to be with their family. And that's where I started doing hypnosis for pain control, so they didn't have to use as many narcotics, but yet they could still be awake in those final minutes to be able to spend that with their families. And the interesting thing was, is so often I'd be talking to the patient, and the patient's talking about loved ones. And John, come here, John, I see you at the foot of the bed. And I'd ask the family, who's John? And they go, oh, that's his dead brother, so he must be hallucinating. But I know he wasn't hallucinating. He was seeing his brother coming to guide him across. And that was just so powerful because the families didn't want to believe that something like that could actually happen. They just wanted to believe that, oh, it's a hallucination, because it was more comfortable for them. But the interesting side was to see that the spirit side was coming through, because they're talking to the spirits, because the spirits are there in the room. In some cases, they would see the light before they died. You know, I had one lady who grabbed my hand. This poor little woman didn't have an ounce of strength, but I thought she was going to break my hand when she grabbed my hand and said, I see the light. And I go, what does it mean to you? And she goes, peace. And that to me was pretty powerful.
Right. Let me stop at this point and walk through some of the typical aspects of a near-death experience. Each is personal to the person having it, but there's a sort of commonality across them that you can see that'll help us understand how they work. But also, I want to address some of the skeptical answers for what these are, because skeptics will tell us that they're anything but a legitimate experience of transitioning to heaven. And that's we'll talk about that too, and sort of dispel some of them very silly arguments. But first, what happens when you die? And let's start there, Dr. Chuck, before I start talking about the near-death experience. Do you want to go through the kind of biological in the last 48 to 24 hours before death? Because there's a very specific series of events the body goes through.
It goes through a series of organ shutdowns. Non-essential organs start to shut down first, like digestion. You're dying, you're not going to need to eat, so digestion shuts down. In some cases, that's a good thing. In some cases, it's not. Digestion shuts down, but then the acids still build up in the GI tract, and it causes nausea and vomiting. So it doesn't always, but if it does, that's a bad thing. So then we have to medicate for that. Peripheral vascular starts to shut down, and you see what's called mottling to the skin, where you see all these little, it looks like a roadmap on the skin, because the circulation isn't as strong. as the heart starts to slow down, one of the first clues that the heart is slowing down and not pumping as well is you'll see that there's less urine output. Urine output is directly relational to the cardiac output. So you'll see that they're not taking in fluids. They're not peeing out fluids. And all these things start to shut down. And then one of the last to go is the respiratory, because the respiratory center is in the lower brain, in the brainstem, and that's one of the last parts of the brain to go. So then the respiratory hangs on till the very end. And you'll see consciousness slowly drift in and out. And somebody who could be in a coma for a week before they die, in their last minutes, last hours of life, they can suddenly be alert and oriented. I've had dementia patients who did not know their family for probably the last 2 years of their dementia suddenly start talking lucidly to their children, recognizing them, knowing their name, and being able to sit there and hold a conversation, even though it was short, for only a few minutes. So all these processes slowly shut down over probably the last 24 to 48 hours of life, and then it culminates where the brain just can no longer function, and as it slowly shuts down, the breathing stops, and they take their final breath.
Right. And now we're going to talk about, there are two ways that someone will start to experience an NDE. When you're dying in a hospice situation, let's say, and it's a slow, natural process, people will start to span worlds. They'll start to, their awareness is half here and half on the other side. So they'll start, like Dr. Chuff mentioned, they'll start seeing deceased loved ones in the room with actual loved ones. The veil between the worlds is lifted. And so they're in between both now, and they'll hold a conversation with you and then a conversation with the deceased loved one. But as the organs shut down, as everything shuts down, they start to, awareness starts to press until we get final breathing portion. Once the last breath is taken and there is final brain death, there is a tunnel that they enter of light. Now, we were talking about hospice patients, and they'll go through the death experience a little more slowly and overlapping with earthly experience, but they're not the ones we get NDE information from because they don't come back. People who have near-death experiences typically experience a sudden, violent, and unexpected death. So let's take a typical heart attack situation, because that's where we first started to learn about NDEs in the 60s and 70s. Once we came up with CPR, and there was this weird tunnel phenomenon, and it was Dr. Raymond Moody who began to first study the fact that all of these cardio patients were coming back with the same story. So what happens is most people describe towards the end, they remember the pain, sudden, unbelievable pain that they can't even think straight. And all of a sudden, it's like pop, the pain stops. And they're often outside of their body looking at their deceased body. Some people have this experience alone. Some people have a deceased loved one with them all of a sudden, when they're in the spirit place, and some people have a being of light who has appeared with them. It differs. While out of the body, they look at the body, and they are perfectly aware of their surroundings, and when they come back, can describe things that happened after their heart had stopped and after their brain had stopped functioning. So we know there is no way that they could have known the conversations, they could have known who was there, what was happening around them. They
and
describe
during that
it,
time, they are clinically dead.
Yes.
They have no vital signs, so they are clinically dead. They are just not biologically dead yet.
Right.
So
and,
if they are revived, they skip the whole biological death, but they do spend the time clinically dead.
Right, exactly. And biologically dead is the one where you just don't come back. The whole body is gone, and there is no resumption of vital signs. But a lot of people describe that in this state, this out-of-body state, they feel like they do have a body. They feel like they have limbs. At some point, there's a darkness, and there is a white light, and it almost looks like a tunnel, people describe. And yet at the same time, while all this is happening, many describe a feeling of overwhelming peace, of love, of calmness. They go into this light. People who go this far describe meeting a being of light, some higher intelligence, and they identify this person differently. And they often go through what's called a life review. This being of light stands with them, and these people view all of the actions they've committed in life. But not just that, they feel the results of their actions going out throughout other people. So if they screamed at someone in traffic, they felt that person's frustration and then the frustration of other people dealing with that person going out throughout time. And this being of light with absolute pure love and humor, many describe, goes through this life review process with them and sort of explains to them or lets them explain, do you understand now what the point was? And typically the point is love. Many people don't go much past this. I mean, this is kind of as far as most get. There are a couple of extraordinary cases. But usually after the life review, at some point it's revealed to the person that they need to go back. Sometimes they're told the reason and don't remember. Sometimes they remember, but they need to go back. Almost every person is reluctant to do so because now that they're in this extraordinary place, it's like cleaning a sewer, taking a shower, and then being told you have to get back in those clothes. So they go back into their bodies. And they remember everything. And some of them come back with gifts. Some of them remember things that they learned there that they couldn't possibly have known in life about mathematics, about other people, about wisdom, about God. And they tend to be very extraordinary people after this experience. Now, some people have negative experiences. We're going to set those to the side. That might be for another show. But mostly it's overwhelmingly positive. And atheists have this experience. Materialists have this experience. Agnostics, people who are never religious. Nuns have this experience. Rabbis have this experience. It is the same experience with different perceptions. And often even fire and brimstone preachers who preach hell come back and completely change their ministry. Completely. Because after this experience, they can no longer teach that. So that's typical NDE. I'm not being specific, and I apologize. There's several excellent books out there you can read. Now, and Dr. Chuck's PhD is in neuroscience, so we can talk about some of the skeptical answers. Some skeptics say we're remembering our birth, going through the birth canal. The light is just from brain death. The rest is an hallucination. And one of the things that a lot of the evolutionary biologists bring up is the fact that the reason we have this, the reason it's the same, is that it's in our brain because we want to calm the populace about death. Like for some reason, we developed this experience during the course of our evolution because the purpose was to calm everybody else watching the dying person, which my husband
yeah,
I always joke.
Yeah,
how is that possible? How is it calming the dying person when we never came back?
and there have been some studies where they're saying due to the anoxic event where there's no oxygen to the brain starts to hallucinate. And some so-called experts say that the pineal gland releases DMT, and DMT is dimethyltryptamine, which is, they insist it's found in the pineal gland, and it's a real strong hallucinogenic. And yeah, DMT can be chemically made. You can make it with a good chemistry set. And it is a really powerful, beautiful hallucinogenic, much safer and much more positive than LSD. But the thing is, there's never been any evidence that the pineal gland actually produces DMT. So to sit there and say it's a hallucination, they've put astronauts in at NASA Space Center. They had a big centrifuge that runs them in circles so fast it pulls all the blood from the brain until they pass out to see how many G-forces their body can take. And, yeah, the blood goes out of the brain. They hallucinate. And they have almost an NDE. It's similar except for the part where there is no white light, there is no higher being, and they never see relatives. So, yeah, just because it meets half of the criteria, does it make it an NDE? Not at all. It's similar, but it's not going through the whole process. And to sit there and say it's close enough just doesn't cut it. It's not really a near-death experience. It's just an anoxic event where they pass out because of the lack of oxygen, and they do hallucinate. But they don't have the same hallucinations that NDE people have. So it's close but no cigar, and it's the wrong answer. And to sit there and stop there, which sadly science likes to do, is just wrong. There's just no way somebody can sit there and they're not hallucinating when they see their loved ones. And to just have an anoxic event and say, well, he didn't see his loved ones. Well, that was just him this time. Well, yeah, the guy was shot, but he was shot in the arm, so he didn't die. So it's the same thing as being shot in the heart. No, it's not. It's close, but no cigar.
Exactly. And Dr. Michael Persinger, brilliant neuroscientist out east, I think at Columbia, he does a lot of experiments on the brain with temporal lobe epilepsy, and he tries to disprove NDEs and alien abductions. But again, all they seem to be able to replicate is a tunnel of light, not much else, not the overwhelming feeling of peace. And then the other issue, and there's a book about this called Mind Sight. There have been people born blind or who were clinically blind who are revived and can report seeing things during their death, quote, unquote, that it's not possible to have seen. So when they give answers like that, they're like, oh, look, replicated the white light, hands done, all done. But they never provide they use Occam's razor on people like Dr. Chuck and I who study other things, that the simplest answer that explains the most facts is usually true. However, you'll get convoluted answers from them about things like near-death experiences that explain one or two facts, and then they consider the whole thing closed.
Need to change the blade in that Occam's razor because it's not cutting it.
I always tell people they like to use Occam's razor like Damocles sword. So.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah.
Folks, we're going to take a brief break for everyone. When we come back, we'll start talking about NDE experiences and earthbound spirits and those who die but never cross over during this experience that they have. And also I'll relate a little bit about my own experience and the things that I think the NDEs can teach us. So Dr. Chuck has a lot of information about both as well. Before we go, Dr. Chuck, you want to tell everybody how to get in touch with you?
You can get me at either of my two websites, ghostsofbranson.com or Ghosts of DFW for Dallas Fort Worth, ghostsofdfw.com. And you can reach me there or on Facebook, Dr. Chuck Kennedy. Dr. Chuck is one word because Facebook doesn't let you use prefixes. But I'm on Facebook. Both Ghost of Branson and Ghost of DFW are also on Facebook.
Excellent. And you can find me on Facebook as well, Christina Rake. The Christina is with a K. Also, I have what are called psychic medium gifts. I prefer gifts of the Holy Spirit, and I do spiritual counseling sessions and readings. You can email me at 40annalady@gmail.com, FORTEANALady@gmail.com, or message me on Facebook. Folks, before we go, stay tuned. You're going to have about 5-minute break if you need to run, get a drink or something, because what we're talking about next is truly going to be a bit mind-blowing here. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
Bow before His throne.
watch it with that song. I just want to start screaming the lyrics. I get so worked up. That's what you get for having
a religious
person. Love
those musical choices, by the way. Those are great.
Those are fun. I like to do that.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was about a month ago, I did a show about sort of some misconceptions in the paranormal religious world. And one of the things that I railed against was this notion that people can go to different places where there are quote-unquote earthbound spirits or where they're believed to be, and they can cross them over. They can go there and they can send them on their way to heaven or whatnot. And I always thought of this as some kind of strong-arming. When I was talking about this and talking against this, one of the things that made sense to me in the back of my mind, but that I did not connect or mention, Dr. Chuck was talking to me about what happens when they don't know what to do, and it keyed into near-death experiences. So Dr. Chuck, who does a tremendous amount of work with EVPs and talking to the dead and has gotten great information, I wanted to let you, Dr. Chuck, talk to that about what happens when someone gets stuck here and what it has to do with the near-death experience and the process, what goes awry. So I'll let you explain that because that's neat.
And I think the key is we assume they understand more than they do. And mm-hmm. that's a big misconception. So let's say that a spirit or let's say a person is in the middle of their near-death experience and they're told to go back. But they're confused. They don't know how to go back. Well, then they don't make it, obviously. What happens when a person doesn't make it, their body dies, but their spirit is left behind, and now they feel confused. They feel trapped. From several spirits I talked to, that white light stays around for about three weeks. But they don't have the same reference for time that we do. So they're confused. They're wondering, should I stay because maybe I've got a new grandchild on the way and I want to stick around and see that grandchild. Maybe I've got unfinished business I have to take care of. Maybe I'm just afraid that if I cross over, I'm going to be judged. And what's good enough? What's passing to get into heaven? Is it 70? Is it 80? Was I good enough? And while they're waiting for all this to come through and figure out what to do, boom, the white light is gone. And now they're sitting there going, well, now what do I do? Now, as Bishop Christina said, that, well, all they have to do is ask God. But do they know that? If they don't know that, they feel trapped. What I've been able to do in a lot of cases where there's spirit attachments, where a spirit will attach to another body because it wants to live vicariously through this person because they have similar interests, and it weighs down the earthbound person, I've been able to hypnotize the earthbound person and then take that spirit and tell them, you got to go. You got to go across. And they go, how? Well, what I would do is I'd ask, do you have a loved one who passed on, your parents, your grandparents? And I would call to the one that passed on to come and guide them across because they didn't know what else to do. So they kind of just sit there. They're lost until their loved one shows up and says, come on with me, and I'll get you across. And then, boom, they're gone. And in other cases, we've had a couple of spirits one guy in downtown Branson here, he's been here for over 100 years, and I was able to corner him and find out, why didn't you move on? You seem so unhappy. He goes, I don't know how. Well, 35 years after he was murdered, his wife died. He wanted to go see his wife. I found out who his wife did. I went to the Historical Association, tracked everything down, got his wife, called to his wife to come and guide him, and she guided him across. One of the things that we've done in some cases is we've had a spirit in a location where the location was set to be, for lack of a better word, doomed, and we needed to get that spirit out of there. In one case, I asked this little boy, you got to come with me. And I had another spirit with me who was a little boy, little Chris. If you guys know anything about me, you know, I started with little Chris in Naperville, and he's followed me down to Branson now. And I asked little Chris to come with and help guide this Andrew over to my place. and we were able to get Andrew to my place. I see the two of them all the time now. They play together, a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old. They play together, and it's just an amazing thing. And I need to give them the opportunity. If they want, they have to cross. But in that case, Andrew came with me. But I ask the listeners out there, what's your experience? And Bishop, have you seen where a lot of the mediumships, the style of mediumship is channeling, where the spirit attaches to you? How can we get a spirit attached to us so we can take them to a safer location? Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Christina, do you have any thoughts on how to get a spirit to attach to you? Is it as simple as just asking them, come with me?
That's been my experience. I've been able to sort of show them. I'm like, you know, watch what I'm watching, sort of just kind of watch my mind. As for channeling, I do not channel. I don't like it. I'm kind of against mm-hmm. that in a lot of ways. But to get a spirit to move over, get them oriented to, I would always try to identify the problem. And in one case, I had a woman whose dad was a pastor. She was trapped in a television station of all places that used to be a boarding house. And there was a nasty spirit, a man she had lived with. They died together in a fire there. And he was keeping her there partially. And then when I got him to go, she still wouldn't leave because she was afraid her father would be angry at her. And I convinced her that, no, there's no judgment. God loves you. And so she left. I think that there are different techniques for different spirits. And remember, folks, I just want to make a point. We're talking about ghosts. Ghosts are earthbound spirits. They're spirits of people who used to be alive, who have remained in this sphere of existence. So while they're kind of in between worlds, time is different, space is different, but they're here. You may have a loved one who is an actual spirit. They're in heaven. They come back to visit. They're not stuck here. I have a lot of grieving people who are into the paranormal contact me upset. I feel my mother's here. Why isn't she in heaven? Why isn't she going? And I have to explain, well, she may be. They're allowed to visit. There's a difference between the two. And oftentimes you need a medium to take care of that. But for my part, whenever I've had someone who was stuck and needed help, they sort of came to me. And I don't know why this is, but by them and by others, there's a different sort of color to my energy. There's just sort of an attraction that says that I'll help you. I won't hurt you. You're safe with me. And so they sort of come and ask me, more as clergy than a medium, can you help? And when I help them, I actually counsel them. But once they realize, it's been my experience that once I've sort of solved their psychological issue, then the light reappears for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like as soon as they're reoriented, that light comes back. Just like when you're working with people and they're stuck, when you convince them that it's okay, when you bring a loved one and they're suddenly reoriented and put back in the place where they were when they died, then everything opens up again for them. That's been my experience, but you know, in the paranormal, 5 experiences do not equal truth. So I'm sure there are lots of other people in different ones.
So many levels, though, and it makes sense on so many levels, and the part about your color makes so much sense because so many of the spirits have said they don't really, they don't see each other as much as they feel each other's vibration. And it's the whole love theory, the law of vibrating energy. And color is frequency, and frequency is vibration. And if you give off the color of help and guidance, they're going to be attracted to your color, your frequency, your vibration, and they're going to know they can trust you. And if you give off a color that's
that's hostile, they're going to sense that frequency, that vibration, and they're going to know, I don't want you around. And that's why,
right.
You know, I've known ghost hunters who can walk into a room that's really active. We're getting all kinds of crazy EVPs. We got meters going up. Everything's going good. And one particular ghost hunter walks in and boom, it shuts everything down. And I truly
right.
believe it's his frequency that just scares the other side, because he just represents, he doesn't represent the color of love and help and guidance. And I know other ghost hunters, Robin down in Dallas, she can walk into a room and she just attracts them like a mother hen does to chicks, because they know she's there to help them. And they see her color, her
right.
frequency, her vibration, and they want her guidance and her help.
That's been my experience, and I don't quite understand it. I haven't been doing this for a very long time. But not officially in the field. I mean, I've been doing this since I was born. But it's been my experience that I'll join a team. They'll get maybe two or three good EVPs per investigation. The first investigation I went on with them, we got 59 EVPs, 10 Class A's, full sentences. And it was like
because
that
they trusted
every investigation
you.
I was on. And they were saying what I was thinking, too, which was hysterical in one case. I just kept saying what I was thinking at the time. Very funny. But I'll really quickly recount this one case I worked on to sort of give everybody an example of what I'm talking about. I entered a home after the investigation, did a walkthrough. Spirit presented himself to me very clear. He would run around the room and then suddenly slump on the couch like he had seized up and collapsed. And it was like that hyper energy collapse, like passing out. He told me his name. He said, I should have been dead three times. The third one, I did it. It was a holiday. I mean, he was jabbering at me, very important to him that I had all this very specific information, family members' nicknames, everything. So I sat down and explained this to the homeowner, and she's like, I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. It's a brand new house. My husband died here, but you're not describing my husband. I don't know who that is. And so I got to leave, and she said, how long ago does this have to be? And I said, it doesn't matter. There's no time for them. And she explained, you know, that a loved one had committed suicide, that he had tried three times, the third one succeeded. I said, did he have a seizure disorder that made him collapse and unconscious or asleep? She said he was narcoleptic. And I think we have our guy fitted every description. Because he had committed suicide, there's a sort of, there's damage to the soul that does that, and they know they don't go to hell, but they need a lot of rehabilitation, and there's a place that you can go to on the other side where you're just sort of built up. You need to recover yourself because you've lost much of yourself in what Earth did to you to cause you to kill yourself, and so he's ready to go. It was the 30th anniversary, in fact, of what he had done. And so I channel, but I don't have to because I'm clairaudient and fully clairaudient. I mean, I can have conversations with people. And I sat down and he told me what he wanted to say to his loved one. I told her, I just relayed it. She spoke back. We did this for 15 minutes. The conversation was unbelievable. I mean, he was giving me names of teddy bears to confirm to her that he was really there. And he wanted to say he was sorry for leaving her alone in a bad situation, for sort of cowarding up. And she said, there's nothing to forgive. I love you forever. And he moved on. And now he actually shows up on investigations to help me. So that was one experience where, yes, he was here and he was being built up to leave. And as soon as we reoriented him and took care of his issue, which was to apologize to the one person in his life he loved the most and felt he left out, he left. And he was on the other side. So it is a very unusual situation, and I really want to learn more about what happens. But I think that near-death experiences and earthbound spirits, if we start to look at this together, and actually, Dr. Chuck explained to an earthbound spirit, this is what's going to happen to you when you get to the other side. We know this because of this, this, and this. There's nothing to be afraid of. And actually educate them on the process of dying that they were not able to do fully the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And I've dealt with a lot of suicides, and suicides are a whole other ballgame because nobody commits suicide to end their life. They commit suicide to end their pain.
Right.
And sometimes it's physical pain, but other times it's emotional pain, and that's some heavy scarring. And he was blessed because he had someone who loved him, but I've talked to several who they commit suicide because they know in their heart nobody gives a damn about them. There isn't a soul on earth that gives a rat's ass whether they live or die, so they die. And that's hard to comfort because, sadly, for whatever reason, they're right. And and I've had people come back from NDEs who attempted suicide, and when they come back, it's so hard to even comfort them because they know they're all alone. And now they're still alive. They saw the light. For whatever reason, they were allowed to come back, but it's so hard for them to heal because their pain goes on because nobody cares about them, and it's impossible to convince them that anyone does care.
Right.
So the suicides are really some of the toughest, whether they're earthbound spirits or whether they're NDEs. Those are just really, really difficult to deal with because the pain just continues.
Right. And I want to jump in here from a religious, theological perspective, because I think it's important to connect the pain that spirits have when they're stuck here with the pain that normal, everyday people have. You know, life crushes us. It's unfair. It's unjust. It hurts. People let us down. They wound us deliberately. But I always tell people we're more than what life does to us. What's happened in our past is not us. It's just things that have happened to us. They're events. They don't define us. They don't destroy us. We can go on. And I want everyone out there to just think about this every single day. There is an unchanging, external, absolute that loves you so much that if he were to forget about you for even an instant, you would cease to exist. You would pop out of existence. You are adored, every single one of you, as if there were only one of you. And if nobody else seems to love you, you have to remember that the fact that you're here means that someone loves you very much. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. And I'm not talking about the whole, you know, in the valley, oh, you're here for a purpose, la, 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 la. No, I'm talking about physics. There's someone concentrating on you so hard that you're here. And so think about that when you're feeling so alone. Think about the fact that this isn't just wonderful, warm, fuzzy statements of New Age depth. This is the truth from physics, from cosmology, from all the studies that I've done in science. Someone is concentrating on you. Someone loves you that much in existence, not just in a body, but afterwards, forever. Just think about that when you're feeling lonely and you're feeling like no one loves you. It's not true. It's never true.
Well, that doesn't always help when you need someone to hug you and hold you as you fall asleep, knowing it's going to be all right. But, yeah, I agree. Yeah. If we weren't loved, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And that's so powerful.
And I wish also everybody out there would realize that when someone else is hurting, just putting a hand on their shoulder and telling them it's going to be okay could mean the world to them. It could mean the difference between them, you know, taking some pills that night or not. I think we all have to understand that everybody's in pain and we're all in this together.
And we all carry our own burden, don't we?
Oh, yeah. We all walk our own mountain.
Somehow we got off NDEs, didn't we?
I'm so sorry. I was trying to relate
it. That's my fault.
Earthbound spirits. Well, you know what, though? There's so much that goes into all of this from all different disciplines. And I know...
I think we need a part two next week.
Yeah, I think we should continue the discussion. I do want to talk about what happened to me, what's happened to other people, and the aftermath, and also the science behind it, which is really amazing.
Because the science really does support it. The critics can sit there and claim, oh, no, science proves it doesn't exist, but that's not true. The science does support NDEs.
Absolutely. And before we go, folks, I want to read something. This is from scripture. It's my favorite scripture verse of all time. When I lost a little nephew, very, very dear to me, who drowned, this was the scripture verse that I kept turning to, because this is hope. This is our hope of the afterlife. What's going to happen when we finally get home? This is Revelation 21:3. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, God's dwelling is with the human race. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will always be with them. He will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death or mourning, wailing or pain, for the old order has passed away." Folks, my friends, my folks' friends, it's time for us to go. Dr. Chuck, you've given your websites to get in touch with you. Can you give them to everybody just one more time so that they know how to get in touch with you? And also let them know if there's anything upcoming that you'll be doing that you'd like people to attend, people to know about.
The ghostsofbranson.com or Ghosts of Branson on Facebook, ghostsofvfw.com and Ghosts of VFW on Facebook. And in August, I'll be headed down to Dallas-Fort Worth and to work with an amazing team. And one of our goals is to really do spirit rescue and help spirits that feel like they don't understand what's happening, whether we help them cross, whether we give them some peace. But we keep running into spirits who are confused, if nothing more. And we've had success in helping these spirits. So this is our plan. Dallas-Fort Worth is a very, very spiritual place, a beautiful place, and we hope to do some amazing things down there.
Excellent. You could contact me at Fortiana Lady, Fortiana Lady at gmail.com, or on Facebook, Christina Arena with a K. I will be at the conference in Post Town, Ohio, Posttown, Post Town School. It is a benefit for Mr. Keith Age, the Rock and Roll Ghost Hunter. It'll be the weekend of July, 18th through the 20th, I apologize. And there'll be vendors, there'll be speakers. I'm speaking there on Christian and paranormal, explaining why in the Bible it's okay to be involved in the paranormal, to speak with the dead, to have psychic medium gifts, all manner of things. Not only is it okay according to the Bible, it is commanded by Jesus. So you'll be quite shocked at what you never knew about that if you come listen to that talk.
Take that one for me, okay? Yes, absolutely. I will get that to you.
Yeah, I got a couple of those, and everybody loves that one. But anyway, stop by every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time for a question of faith. come back to us again and again, excuse me, for our life-changing and mind-changing programming. Good night, everyone. Stay weird, my friends. Take care, Dr. Chuck.
Take care. God bless, everyone.